how to integrate TypeScript within there, how to at least architecture it on a higher level, like what should be the different pieces. And then you can let the large language model fill in the rest, because these days that's a privilege that we do have. And it makes learning even a little bit, you don't have a deep mastery, but hey, I have a web app that exists on the World Wide Web.
Mm. Nice. So tell me about a time that you had to explain a technical or complex idea. I feel like that's something that you're really good at explaining, like complex ideas, but to a non-technical audience or in a simple way.
Of course.
How did you make sure that the other person understood it?
Sure. So I like to teach. I've been a tutor since graduating high school. And oftentimes I do find myself in this situation.
Yeah.
Where it's like some kid's parent is just paying me money to teach this kid.
Yeah.
But this kid could be dumb as rocks, you know? Like, no offense intended. Like, we all start somewhere. No one comes out of the womb knowing that pi is equal to 3.14159.
Yeah.
You know, 26535, 89793, 2384. Sick. I'm just kidding. Okay. Anyways. And so, learning is, it's really predicated on this one concept called elaborative encoding.
Yeah.
Have you guys heard of that?
No.
Okay. So, it's basically where, and this is the hard part about teaching. It's you need to probe and understand what that person knows.
Yeah.
And then you need to connect the thing that you're trying to teach them with the stuff that they know.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, it's not going to stick. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like, so for example, like, take the word nocturnal.
Yeah.
A lot of us know what the word nocturnal means. Right? Rafi, do you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Do you know what the word diurnal means?
No.
That's a bit of a new word, right?
Yeah.
It nocturnal means you're awake during the night, but diurnal, It seems foreign, but when you connect it to nocturnal, it's like, okay, so you're awake during the day. And so suddenly elaborative encoding occurs. And so I think that's one of the techniques I use, because obviously it's not cut and dry. It's not elaborative encoding as a solution. You should try kanji. I'm not sure if you've ever written any Chinese characters, but there's not a lot of connection you can do. You just got to sit there and you got to write it.
Yeah.
You know, it's the same thing with sometimes, like factorizing, doing binomial expansions when you're a kid.
Yeah.
It's like, there's not a lot of elaborate, just do it. You just gotta sit there and do it.
Yeah.
But yeah, when it comes to explaining things to a non-technical client, I would really try to understand what they know about the problem and distill it in terms of analogies.
Yeah.
Analogies, and maybe extend the stuff that they do know about our technical field. But obviously, sometimes that bridge can be literally the difference between an undergraduate degree, and you can't do that. So there will be it's lossy transfer of information.
So, for example, have you heard of AWS Bedrock?
I've heard of AWS, but not Bedrock.
Okay, what's a sort of technical concept, or like, okay, so
is it like but Databricks?
So okay, with modeling, right?
Yeah.
How would you sort of explain in a non-technical way what the train test, so train validation and test data sets?
Good question. Okay.
Think about if you're explaining it to someone like me who wouldn't have the foggiest of an idea what, like, I know what modeling is.
Yeah.
At a very high level.
Mm.
But like, yeah.
Okay, yeah, I can do this. This is a good one. Okay. Yeah. Do you mind? Actually, wait, I have my own copy. Because that's the good copy, I've got the bad one. Okay.
Let me make this a bit harder. Like, you can't use any props in this situation. Like, you have to, but client's asking, like,
but they've got to have a problem. Like, they've got to, maybe we solve the credit card fraud detection.
No, for example, they ask, like, what's a train data set?
Okay.
Yeah.
What's a validation data set and what's a test? What's the difference between the, why do we have these things here?
Okay, sure. So, Amanda, you imagine you have a data set, like a credit card detection data set. So it's got lots of rows, as a matter of, like, say, 200,000 of them,
mm-hmm.
right? All of these are transactions, okay? Now, this whole thing, this is your, you could use this as your training set, right? But then your model wouldn't really have anything to test on. How would you test how good it is? You don't have any more data. Do you get that? Like, so you've got all of these rows, and we used all of it to tweak the neural network. And so what we do is we train on this much, and then we test on this much. And that's how we know how good our model is.
Yep.
Cool. Now, slight caveat, there's just one more division, okay? And that division is, when we make a model, sometimes we want to test lots of them, right? Because we've got a wide variety of really good models, right? We've got decision trees, we've got neural nets these days, we've got support vector machines. And what we do instead is we take this data set and we just take a little bit of fat off to adjust the parameters, because they're called hyperparameters. And so that's what we use this validation set for. Do you understand that? So support vector machines here, neural nets, but all of them have like these special, like maybe we have a regularization parameter. And so we can use this validation set to adjust that and get a really good model. And then we test that whole model on this testing set. Cool? So those are the three divisions.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah, nice.
Yeah.
That's
great.
Good. Cool.
Thank you. Right. Look, I think.
I hope that wasn't patronizing.
No, not at all. No, yeah, it was good. No, it was good. So, have you had a time where you challenged an existing process or suggested a more innovative idea on how to do something? And how did you approach it, and what happened in the end?
Yeah. So I actually find this to be the case oftentimes on the field. It's like, because I'm pretty quick, so I have a slightly different playing style. And sometimes I clash heads, you know, with the rest of the team who wants to play a little bit of a different tempo,
yeah,
and things like that. And you know what? That's okay. Like, it's a team sport, right? We're all just trying to harmonize. And if it's 6v1, then, hey, it's 6v1, you know, like, AJ's got to adapt. I go by AJ on the field. And then... In team situations as well, like, because we've done a few group projects at university.
Yeah.
Usually my ideas do stick, but sometimes they don't because of the activation energy. I'm somebody that uses a computer with a split keyboard.
Yeah.
I type in Dvorak at like 120 words per minute, and I have like terminals just spawning everywhere. So that kind of a workflow is like not something that I can impose on other people. And so it's like, but you know, like the first 2 years of your undergrad, you try to convince everyone this is the best thing in the world.
Yeah.
But you can't really impose that. And so you need to either meet people in the middle or meet them all the way, or you need to compromise as well. At least in my experience.
Yeah. So it sounds like, well, what are the specific steps you take to maybe challenge that existing process? Like, what are some soft ways that you can influence somebody?
Right.
Like, is it, for example,
yeah,
in a client meeting, if they want to go with one sort of decision,
mm,
but you strongly feel about the other decision,
yeah,
right? And how would you kind of softly,
yeah,
kind of guide them to sort of,
yeah, you know, Socrates did this back in Athens, and
yeah,
he got sentenced to death. Yeah,
that doesn't happen anymore,
yeah,
in a,
yeah,
workplace.
I'm glad that doesn't happen anymore.
I can confirm.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I'm just kidding. But the thing, so what Socrates used to do, right, is he would go to a normal person, he would ask them, well, what is justice, and they would give him an example of what they thought justice was, and he would just find a flaw in their reasoning.
Yeah,
and then he would kind of point it out. I think I'd probably try a similar approach in the setting. It's like, hey, okay, let's imagine we deployed this.
Yeah.
Let's deploy this, and then, okay, cool. What if you do 1,000 transactions?
Yeah.
Like, that's okay. What if you do 10,000? It's fine, right? What if you do 1,000,000? Do you think it'll work? It's like, because like, say for example, I'm suggesting we shift to a microservices architecture,
yeah,
as opposed to a monolithic one. And then it's like, what about concurrency? What if two people access it at the same time? What happens?
Yeah.
And I think slowly, of their own volition, they'll start to see that their idea is breaking down.
Yeah.
Because if I feel strongly about a particular thing, then there's got to be a reason why. there's got to be some kind of, you know, architectural things that I've seen